We're talking about the Latino community being hit hard by COVID. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Official statistics from the CDC show that Latinos in America are hospitalized or dying from the coronavirus at four times the rates of people who are white, and that there could be a serious undercount here. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say gaps in their data come from their dependence on local reporting from the states. Are infection rates in your community soaring? Why is that? Where do you get your information about COVID-19? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Zeno Franco is an associate professor of family and community medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Franco, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give us some perspective, some overview, if you will, what the Latino community in Wisconsin is facing right now?
Sure. I'm a Hispanic professor at the medical college, and so this issue is near and dear to my heart. I think, you know, one of the issues for us is that, initially the spread was largely in the African-American community. The deaths were largely in the African-American community. And then things started to spread out into the white community as well. But I think a little bit of complacency set in, I think, early on, where people felt like they weren't going to get impacted because it was just in one region. And that's not the case. The virus doesn't discriminate. It will affect anybody. And so I think what we're seeing now is that it's actually moving from community to community, and Hispanics are just as vulnerable as any other group. And there's actually some specific issues within each of the communities of color that we work with that have created some additional vulnerability and some issues there. So we are very concerned at the moment.
What do you see in Milwaukee County, which leads the number of cases?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we're looking at the South Side right now, as you mentioned, there's a hotspot in the Hispanic community. We know and have worked with a number of folks across the entire city who've been impacted. And so the deaths and the impact have been very real for us at the medical college. So, you know, we're worried about folks not taking it seriously enough. And there are also a number of essential workers on the South Side who do need to go to work to keep a paycheck coming and to keep their families sustained. And that essential work is something that puts them at risk. It puts them in a vulnerable situation. Of course, because of the mixed documentation status in many of the homes, there are concerns about disclosure as well. So folks don't want to necessarily talk about what their COVID-19 status is. They may not want to disclose to their employer because they're afraid of what the ramifications may be.
Okay, so you bring up a lot of issues there. One about vulnerability of workers who are working these essential jobs, interfacing with a lot more of the public, but then being very, very hesitant about sharing their status of a test. What is going on there?
Yeah, I think, you know, for any of us, being ill is, you know, you worry about how people are going to perceive that. In this situation, it's a very serious illness. For some people, it's, you know, obviously it has a lot of community level implications. And so people from all backgrounds, I think, are a little bit less happy to talk about kind of what their status is in terms of COVID-19. I think that's only magnified when you think about the Hispanic population, again, the undocumented status, being worried about being able to bring in a paycheck. If a production plant goes down because there's a number of people that are sick, that's going to impact a whole bunch of people as well. And so I think because of, you know, just this sort of normal stigma about being ill, people may not want to reveal that information, but you have this kind of overlay with the documentation status. And I think one of the things that we're really trying to get information out to people is that the testing doesn't have anything to do with your status as a citizen here or as a non-citizen. We're not looking to deport anybody. We're looking to make sure that people get tested so that we know whether they're healthy or not, whether they can return to work, and so that we can get them information and support if they need to isolate. That's the key, is really making sure that people are communicating what their status is, getting tested if they need to be tested, and trying to help the entire community stem this problem.
If you're just joining us, we're asking about how the coronavirus is affecting the Latino community, in particular with Dr. Zeno Franco, who is an associate professor of family and community medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. You can join in. Are you an immigrant, or do you work with people who are from other countries? Did you have a discussion about wearing a mask at work or taking safety precautions because of the virus? What resources do you provide? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Franco, in terms of access to health care and the, you know, contributions of the rates of diabetes, other conditions, how can that complicate the situation around this pandemic?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest issues for us right now is that there is differential impact based on health status. If you have a chronic condition, that makes you a lot more vulnerable, as we all know. But I think one of the things that we saw very early on in the epidemic here in Milwaukee is communities of color have higher rates of these chronic long-term health conditions. For whatever reason, maybe just because there was a person who had it early on that was African-American, the African-American community started to see really widespread infection rates and deaths associated with this very early in the process. And I think we started to get very focused on sort of that. And I think what that really shows is that there are fundamental differences in this community in terms of access to healthcare, in terms of rates of these long-term chronic diseases that haven't been well controlled in the past. And so all of a sudden, the systemic problems that we have that we haven't resolved as a society come up in full force. And so this is really, I think, a point in time where we need to reconceptualize how we think about the city of Milwaukee for the health of all. And so in a funny sense, we've been able to kind of let this play out under the radar. We know it's there in terms of the discrimination and the segregation in the city. This is one of the most segregated cities in the country. But COVID-19 laid that bare. And so we had the early deaths in the African-American community. Devastating for a number of people that I work with personally. I have a lot of strong connections with folks that I've worked with in the African American community over the last decade. And those were very personal losses for folks. And what we're really concerned about right now is that the same thing is going to start to happen on the South Side. The rates of death haven't been as high, but we think that some of that is trailing the infection rate. So You're exactly right that these sort of underlying chronic conditions make people vulnerable. Those are disproportionately represented in our minority communities, and it's a very real concern.
The pandemic is exposing inequities, and it sounds like where you're talking, the public health is trying to get in front of something that has been a problem for so long.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those situations where we're kind of caught, because we haven't taken care of this as a society earlier on. This particular situation is kind of getting ahead of us in that way. And so we're trying to rally as many resources right now as we can to try to address it.
Dr. Zeno Franco, Center for Healthy Communities and Research at the Medical College of Wisconsin. You can join in. We're talking about healthcare challenges facing Latinos during the pandemic. What do you find in your community? What is the impact? Do you see infection rates higher in your neighborhood? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Franco here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Latinos may be more vulnerable to the virus as a result of the same factors that have put communities of color at risk nationwide. As we've learned, holding down an essential service job requires interacting with the public during the pandemic. We've also been learning how a lack of access to healthcare contributes to vulnerabilities with the spread of the virus. How do you think we should address the racial disparities in coronavirus infections? Did a contact tracer or clinician inquire about your ethnicity and background when you learned of your test results or received hospital treatment? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Dr. Zeno Franco, who is with the Medical College of Wisconsin. He stays with us. Dr. Franco, CDC is saying there are gaps in its data reporting. It's reliant on what the states tell the CDC about infection rates. Why is inaccurate data problematic in a pandemic, especially in the Latino community?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things is information is power in these situations. And the more accurate information that we have, the better we can sort of see where a hotspot is occurring and respond to it effectively. So, you know, time and again, we see that sort of the reliance on high quality data is what makes a big difference in these events.
Federal and local governments and hospitals, they may all count race and ethnicity differently. And even on forms like the census, the government race category doesn't have a box to check for Latinos. How can this lack of specificity, you know, be problematic for public health?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things with that is that the more detailed information that we have about a person's background, the more that we're able to start to understand. And I think one of the things is we have to not just think about this pandemic. Another pandemic is possible. We don't really want to think about that, but I think it's super important. I think this has really raised awareness in people that we need to be spending more time and more effort and frankly, more money on public health and basic research that can assist us. The more detailed picture that we have about a person's background, the more we can understand how the disease has impacted them. If we do have deaths in minority communities, why is that occurring? Why is that disproportion there? And so, again, tracking back to what we were talking about, this, you know, kind of underlying health issues, there may also be genetic components that predispose certain groups of people to certain types of pathogens. And so it's really incumbent on us, I think, at this point in time to start looking at how do we engage in understanding our differences, not to separate us, but to help us really do a deeper dive on the research side that's going to help save lives in the future.
Do you find language and cultural barriers here during the pandemic? Is it important to have this information about the spread in other languages?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we've been working on very extensively at the medical college, and other academic partners in the community are also working in the same space. So there have been a number of funded projects from the Advancing a Healthier Wisconsin Endowment. I'm actually working on one currently with the city and the county. That's taking public health information that's kind of readily available and trying to either translate that into Spanish or, in a sense, transliterate that into other cultures for communities of color that may not have as immediate access to public health information. There's a number of folks from different, you know, kind of, if you want to think about it, some older folks in some of the communities of color, even some of the younger folks, for different reasons, they may not be engaging with the public health messaging that we're seeing coming out of standard channels. And so that cultural tailoring is super important to get the word out as far as we can into the community so that people see the value of thinking about the health behaviors, wearing a mask, washing your hands, social distancing, and breaking through some of the barriers to doing some of these things. You know, a lot of the public health messaging around, say, for example, if you do need to quarantine because you have a positive case in your home, it assumes a sort of middle-class home with two bathrooms and there's one family. In reality, in the communities of color that we work with, people may be doubled or tripled up in a home, and it may be a lot more difficult to kind of quarantine one person who's sick. And so we have to really think about the assumptions that we have when we communicate about public health as well.
If you're just joining us, we're asking about how the coronavirus is affecting the Latino community in particular with Dr. Zeno Franco. He's an associate professor of family and community medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Franco, in terms of contact tracing, how well are contact tracing efforts keeping up with the demands for the numbers of Latinos who have become infected with the coronavirus and how that contact tracing works in the Latino community.
Yeah, and I don't know all the details there. I'm actually in partnership with the city and the city Department of Public Health, and there's some folks there that probably can answer this better than I can. But I think, you know, we're one of the issues for us is that we're kind of having to ramp up contact tracing. There really wasn't sort of the infrastructure built in at first. You also have to think, of course, about you need to have multilingual contact tracers. And I think one of the big things, like we've been touching on before, is trust. Folks may be a little bit reluctant to talk. They don't necessarily want to divulge who all they have been in contact with because they don't want to put other people at risk from their perspective that, you know, they could see that maybe somebody, again, has mixed documentation status in the home, and there's real concerns about privacy. And that's where this worry about, you know, being sent to country of origin is getting in the way, I think, of our public health outreach.
When you talk with your colleagues at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and you've said personally that you've seen the loss all around you, how do you talk about that loss? Because you're seeing it firsthand, and this is hitting home.
Yeah, I mean, I work with one of the most diverse staffs on campus at the medical college with a program called All of Us. And, you know, it's been very personal. We've had family members of staff who have been lost in this. And I think, you know, one of the tough things is just when people kind of try to say, well, it's not a big deal. It's a huge deal. And again, it you know, at the beginning of this, it really was impacting certain communities of color. Differentially, there was a lot of worry, a lot of concern. That's a situation, too, where conspiracy theories can sort of spin out of control that this is somehow targeted or that there's not enough services that are coming out to help deal with this. And again, like I said, the virus doesn't care what color you are, what your background is. It's going to attack whoever it can. But because of, again, these underlying health problems, because people didn't have the word initially about how important social distancing was, maybe because they weren't engaging with standard channels of communication, what we saw is, again, this differential impact in communities of color. We're having staff walk in the door telling us that they had family members that were very close to them who had passed or who were gravely ill for many days in the hospital. And that's a personal cost. It's not an abstract thing.
You and the public health community can't undo generations of racism and oppression. But what steps can we take today to help improve the outlook here on this pandemic, especially in communities of color?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. One of the most important things, I think, from our perspective is masks and mask wearing and changing the culture around that. You know, from my perspective in the Hispanic community, there's a real sense that we need to stay at work. We need to be protecting our families by bringing in a paycheck. And there's a certain amount of fearlessness that comes in into play with that. You can't really afford to be afraid in a sense. And so I think it's easy to say, well, I'm strong enough, I'm brave enough, I don't need a mask. This is a situation where I think in the Hispanic community, we need to not think about so much that kind of, in a sense, of bravado that comes with having to struggle to make it. And really think about what does the community need. And we also have very deep community values. We're oriented to family. We're oriented to the broader community. And remembering that the mask is not just protecting you, it's protecting everyone around you. There's sometimes what we describe as fatalism too, that, you know, if folks come from a more religious background, that it, you know, whatever happens is God's will. And that's a very deep, I think, sentiment in a lot of Hispanic culture. And I think that's fine, but this is a situation where we actually can take some actions to help, again, ourselves and each other, still being respectful of kind of the cultural values, but really kind of tapping into the communal spirit within the Hispanic culture. Mexican Fiesta has actually offered to host production and distribution of disposable masks. And we're right now we're looking for volunteers to come down to Mexican Fiesta and assist in a careful way, in a hygienic way, with producing these disposable masks that can go out to businesses, individuals in the community, different community organizations that are trying to get these out to the community. And I think the masks are ultimately going to be one of the huge factors in keeping business open for the next few months as we try to figure out how to deal with the pandemic more. So that's one thing. I think another thing is, you know, for people to get more involved in kind of thinking through, you know, what we can do in the future. There's a program that a number of the universities in the region, the Medical College, UW-Madison are involved in, called All of Us. And one of the things that that's doing right now is trying to think about the interaction between the host and the pathogen in COVID-19. And so get involved in research. Be more active in thinking through how you're interacting with the healthcare system and with health.
Dr. Franco,
for all of us.
Dr. Franco, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Dr. Zeno Franco, Associate Professor of Family and Community Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. We'll be back after this news update on the Ideas Network.